I like looked up Hyatt's and I looked up Marriott's. I looked up Hilton's and all of them are like, contact us because we're not open.
Yeah. I mean, there'll be a local something we can stay at and you just won't get points for the night. Like 5-star under with a crazy, like, yeah, we'll be fine.
Okay.
You're right. Then none of them are branded.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with host Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 602 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined today by Mr. Seth Miller and Mr. Faz Mahmood. Gentlemen.
Evening.
Good evening.
We were trying to decide if we do this afternoon your time or evening your time. We ended up on evening.
It's cool when, like, we deal with things that are 3 hours apart, and is it going to be at 1:40, 4:30, or 7:30, and we just say 4:30 in the chat and then don't bother with the time zone and hope for the best.
We hope if we all show up. Yes. All right. Alaska made an announcement this past week. Two new routes, Seattle to Paris and Seattle to Athens. I believe Athens is 3 or 4 times a week.
And Athens is 3 and Seattle and Paris is 5 for next summer.
Okay, so two new routes. Are we excited?
I don't know. You're the one who lives in the Pacific Northwest.
I find it cool that they're doing some cool things. I feel like the attack on Paris will be met swiftly by Delta or Air France or KLM, whatever. Athens is interesting because I think it's the only West Coast route to Athens. I don't think there is anything else nonstop.
Is it United doing San Francisco?
I don't think so.
Yeah. They do.
Yeah, it's definitely only Pacific Northwest, if not the only West. They made a big deal out of that in the pitching. But 3 days a week for the summer season, like, and listen, we have talked far more than we should about why the hell does anybody go to the hottest places in the world for the summer. And Athens certainly qualifies, but sure, fine. Apparently people do. I think 3 days a week, summer, seasonal, that one actually could do okay.
I think it makes sense. I mean, even the 5 times a week Paris, I think does fine.
Yeah.
I think there's decent demand to Paris. I know it's the easiest way to get to the rest of France.
I think the biggest thing this tells us is that Alaska had success this year with the European routes.
Rome and London. Yeah.
Yeah.
They did.
Okay. And Iceland.
Or they have 787s coming and don't want to send them to Asia.
I think if they're willing to go procure slots at these airports and go through the effort of going through the logistical work of setting up a station, that they feel like they are having success.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue they feel like they will have success more than they are having success, and they don't have much of a choice because this is the path they've planned. Now, I'm not saying they haven't been successful yet. I don't have the numbers. I haven't seen it. I would be shocked if those transatlantic routes were profitable first year, even in the current environment, but especially in the current environment also, right? Like, coach demand has been fine. Premium demand has not shrunk at all, but also fuel costs. These are long trips.
Right. But I think that if it was a risky proposition, I think they would be going to Madrid and not Athens because they can push on to Iberia for onward traffic.
Yeah.
And are they part of the JV? I always forget.
No, they're not part of the JV right now.
Okay.
But they can still code share and push into.
No, I'm wondering if they're sharing risk.
I still think that one of Alaska's biggest blind spots is a JV partner across the Atlantic.
I mean,
and I think they could do better if they had one.
I mean, I think that's the case for any airline. If they're a part of JV, they'll do better.
Yeah, but like they haven't. I guess we don't know if they're pursuing it, and I would hope they are.
I mean, the question is AA and BA willing to share it,
and will other regulators let them?
Yeah,
yeah, because it would be. I mean, an Iberia JV would be fantastic. Seattle Madrid on either's metal.
It'd be good for Alaska because it's better connectivity to Africa.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. I'm interested to see what Delta does now because Delta's clearly feeling encroached in Seattle. And I think they're between Austin, Seattle, and Boston. They're starting to spread themselves too thin.
Mm. Yeah. You think if they tried to go after Athens, you think they would start Seattle, Athens?
Sure, they'd try.
Delta?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's a good question, right? Like, they're trying to, like, do all this stuff and keep up at Seattle and make Seattle this big hub.
They're so focused on Asia, though. Like, and Asia's year-round, not seasonal. That's the other question is, like, what is Alaska going to do with these planes seasonally? Do you take a page out of the Aer Lingus playbook, which we talked about a couple weeks ago where they're sending their 330s now instead of across the Atlantic down into the islands and this med there for the winter. Does Alaska just start doing that and sending 787s full of tourists down to Cabo?
Hawaii.
I think Delta.
Hawaii?
Why couldn't they?
Haven't we agreed that we're only anything that touches the islands is going to be marketed as Hawaiian?
I guess they could, though. It's Hawaiian cruise.
But the planes are marketed as Alaska.
Yeah. Paint one side Hawaiian, paint one side Alaska.
Maybe paint Pepsi on the third side.
I mean, you could have Hawaiian on the inside, just because the plane says Alaska. But the fact that Delta is starting Seattle Narita tells me they'll start Seattle Athens.
And Air France does Seattle Paris, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I mean, this was the CEO, Alaska CEO,
and Delta also flies Seattle Paris. That's a double daily for the SkyTeam pair, right? Air France has an A350 on it. Delta has an A330neo on it. So there's a lot of lift already.
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, but the Alaska CEO has already kind of said, you know, we're going after the top tertiary, I guess I would call them, routes out of Seattle to Europe. That's what he cares about. That's why they went after Rome, because it was like the top unserved market from the West Coast and from Seattle specifically.
I mean, they see an opportunity, so good on them for chasing it.
Yeah, yeah. What were you going to say, Seth?
I'm looking at Google Flights here because that was a faster way to check schedules. And there's a new bit in the details that they offer. So there's, you know, the airline, class of service, flight number, and aircraft type. And then there's underneath checked bag for a fee, full refund for cancellations, free change, possible fare difference. These are sort of components of the fare booked. And like, free refund for cancellations, that doesn't seem right. I'm looking at one that's a one-way ticket offered for $1,174. And when I select it, $1,174 is basic economy, which does not come with changes or free refunds. There is a main extra does offer full refundability, but it is not the price that is being offered. It's $210 more. And I'm wondering when someone's going to file a DOT complaint against Google Flights for misadvertising things.
Oh.
Can you file a DOT complaint against Google Flights?
Probably not. I actually think meta search engines do have some regulations around them, but at this point, can you file a complaint against anybody and actually expect anything to get done?
It's fair.
All right, let's talk about Asia a little bit. Sun Phu Quoc A330s.
This is a Vietnamese airline. They bought up all the old, or maybe not all, but a bunch of the old American A330s. So those are finally, you know, 5 years or 6 years after they were grounded in peak COVID, finally getting a new bit of action. This is a very, very leisure carrier operation in Vietnam, going wide bodies. My understanding is I think they're going to do mostly regional stuff, not Europe, but I need to double check that. But I do find it vaguely interesting, especially because this comes in as Bamboo Airways basically seems to, I'm not sure if they fully closed up shop, but like slashing their fleet, and was similar, right? They grew rapidly in the late 20 teens, acquired a whole bunch of airplanes. They were all random. The fleet was like the most random mishmash of stuff I'd seen in a long time. You didn't know which plane you were going to get, what config it was going to be. It was literally a billionaire looking to become a millionaire.
I mean, everyone thought Bamboo was going to be like the carrier that kind of unseated Vietnam Airlines, and that just didn't happen.
No.
So you think Sun Phu Quoc is the...
I think it's going to be very much I don't think it's trying to do the same thing as Bamboo did. I think they're going to stay very local, sort of regional stuff within Asia.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to find if someone's got more details on that, because I forgot to do my research.
I mean, it looks like right now they only fly internationally to Taipei, Seoul, Hong Kong, Chengdu, Singapore, and Bangkok.
Yeah.
So fairly close route.
There we go. Initial deployments will focus on expanding medium haul services to Kazakhstan and Russia, alongside boosting capacity on high demand Asian routes, including Australia, Japan, all right, Czech Republic, and Poland eventually.
So similar to Bamboo then.
Yeah. Bamboo tried Paris, I think, but yeah.
Paris,
Vietnam makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Phu Quoc is the, I think it's like an island, right? Off the south coast, I think.
Yeah.
So maybe there's some leisure traffic there or something. Interesting, though. So they've got all the A330s from America, or at least
some. 8 A330-200s.
Wow.
And serving as a, quote, operational bridge until the airline receives its first newly ordered Boeing 787-9s in 2031. So, you know, plenty of time for them to experiment with wide-body operations a la Indigo, decide whether it actually makes sense or not, and see if some new delivery slots open up early next decade.
Yeah. So these planes have been sitting there all this time, and American didn't try to get them back?
Apparently not.
Vasu strikes again.
I mean, yes and no. I'm not 8 or 12 planes. Like, it's not enough.
It's 2 to 3 routes.
How many people?
Yeah.
How many convinced American have to put in to make that work? True. Right? Some fleets suck. And when you've got a whole bunch of other stuff, putting a handful of these back in the system, like, I would argue that, right, American dropped them because there just weren't enough to matter. And then they are paying the penalty for not being able to get more of anything else. But how do you make this work?
Fair.
I mean, do we know if the 330s were ever leased, or are they still parked somewhere? The 330-300s.
I don't know. I could try to find out. But
let's see. Then Discover is pitching premium.
Yeah. So this is good, I think. The Discover is the Lufthansa subsidiary that runs non-hub routes mostly within Europe. And in this case, they've got a couple single aisle planes that they're putting a 2-2 premium cabin on.
Huh.
They had sort of started down this path with a premium product at one point before, and I put that in air quotes, but now there's, like, you can buy premium, which is blocked middle seat, or you can buy premium and then pay up to the 2-2 seating. Their initial indicators are they're charging way too much for it. So, you know, who knows how it will play. And I simply say that, I mean, like, 200 or 300 euros for the seat on a relatively short flight. So that'll be interesting. But yeah, there's at least a plan, I guess, sort of. I think the interesting bit here is a European airline going with a formal premium seating product rather than more Eurobiz.
I mean, but Discover does more than just intra-Europe, right? Like, they do Philly, Frankfurt. They do stuff across the pond as well.
Those are wide bodies, though. That's a different config.
Okay.
This is on narrow body planes.
Okay.
So they're doing premium, like, in the intra-Europe or in the intra-longer haul Europe? So,
you know, it's like a medium-ish haul situation.
To me, it's kind of funny that they're doing it and not Lufthansa.
Dude, the entire Lufthansa group is so bonkers. How many different subsidiaries do you need? In Philly, it's interesting to watch because the number of people who walk into the United Lounge expecting to be able to walk in and get turned away is astronomical within a few hours of that flight.
Because
they're not technically part of Starlight. So all these people show up because they bought a ticket on Lufthansa.
Yeah.
And I mean, Lufthansa flies, you know, or had flown Frankfurt and Munich to Tel Aviv, and they were doing that on narrow bodies. And that's Eurobiz for...
Right.
It's a long flight. I mean, it's five plus hours.
But DA is doing that in London.
Yeah. Right. Some of these planes are going to do routes like that also. But this this is service. This is non-hub. Discover does non-hub service for Lufthansa.
So it'll be things like Cologne, Hamburg.
Yeah. Is this what used to be Germanwings then?
Yes.
We're going to get in so much trouble. One of our listeners likes to send me notes every time we talk about Lufthansa and its many subsidiaries telling us what we got wrong.
Well, that's great. I want to know because it's a cluster.
Oh, better yet, can someone just send us a cheat card?
Yeah.
Then we won't screw it up in the future.
You're going to need a map.
I'm not going to boil the ocean with AI trying to figure this out.
You really just said boil the ocean?
Exactly. There was like double puns there.
Yeah. There's a lot there.
Yeah. I was actually going to fly Discover on Las Vegas, Frankfurt on the way to Colombo. And I tried to book it, and then they removed the seats, and I think it actually went out with only 2 business class seats sold.
Yeah, so that's something – you raise an interesting point. I don't understand what airlines' revenue management are doing because I had a similar experience from Frankfurt, Colombo on Sri Lankan. There was maybe 10 people out of 40 seats.
Yeah.
Like, why is revenue management not opening these seats up to partners and getting some revenue versus no revenue?
Yeah. They're maintaining the cabin –
integrity.
Look, Sri Lankan wasn't a bad product, but I assure you there's nothing to maintain.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like Starlux. When I asked about the upgrade, they're like, no, it's a flat fee of, I think they wanted, it was like $800 from Taipei to Singapore for our flight. I'm like, I can't justify that. Like, that's a bit much to go from premium economy. Right.
Do you guys want the notes, though? I found the message of our listener who gave me some feedback.
All right. All right.
This goes back to when we were actually talking about Condor, which is not part of Lufthansa Group anymore. But they were, quote, they were founded by Lufthansa for leisure travel in the 70s-ish. Somewhere between 2000 and 2005, a majority was sold to Thomas Cook. And in the early 2010s, Lufthansa Group sold off the last stake of Condor over to Thomas Cook. And then at the end of the 20-teens, Lufthansa Group wants a leisure carrier integrated into their hub and starts Project Ocean, which now became Discover Airline.
So then what was Germanwings? Like, Germanwings was their, like, domestic low-cost carrier, or, like, the intra-Europe low-cost carrier?
Germanwings was a separate non-hub. Oh, wait, there's more. Hang on.
Perfect.
I think this may be, I'm not sure this is from the same day or not. Eurowings Discover is not a thing anymore. It was or whatever. Discover is just A330s and A320s for leisure routes out of the hubs. So I was wrong about that. Discover is out of the hubs. The Eurowings is the non-hubs, and that's separate from Discover.
So is Eurowings the ones getting these new seats?
No, Discover is. So they're going to fly from hubs.
Okay. All right.
But also, I think, you know, to Foz's question of how many different subsidiaries do they need? The answer is, how many different unions are they trying to bust? A lot of the various subsidiary situations, that we deal with, that Lufthansa is dealing with, is designed to, and similar to how Ryanair farms out to its different region or, you know, national flags and whatever with all the different operations. And a lot of airlines in Europe do it, is which union can they get the best concessions from at any given time?
But that's fine. The problem is, like, BA does that too, except BA from a customer standpoint is cohesive. Lufthansa has gone out of its way to make, from a customer standpoint, make them all isolated, including, there's also Edelweiss, right?
Yeah.
In Zurich. And so from a customer experience standpoint, while both BA and Lufthansa are doing the same thing, BA is much more frictionless than Lufthansa is from a customer standpoint.
They treat the subsidiary as like one world.
Yeah. Which BA subsidiary are you talking about, though? Like, they've got the only subsidiary, I mean, they run separate union groups out of Gatwick versus Heathrow, and then they've got the E90s at City.
Yeah, so they've got Euroflyer, they've got Cityflyer. Then even at Heathrow, you can tell because the flight numbers are different. Some of them are SHT versus BAW.
For what? I haven't seen that.
For shit.
Yes, for a lot of the short-haul stuff within England, it's SHT.
Domestic?
Yeah.
Interesting. Do the planes cross? Those planes, though, would cross. I wonder if that's just a call sign thing, or it's actually separate operations. There's no way they're dedicating planes just to the domestic operations.
No, probably not. But, I mean, even if you look at the three bases, Gatwick, Heathrow, and City, they're three different airlines at that point. But from a customer standpoint, you would never know.
Yeah, no, agreed. Especially the Eurowings Discover, all the little non-alliance, non-normal subsidiaries is confusing.
Let's talk about another premium product. The points guy is claiming that Delta has said 80% of their F seats on the 44F A321s are sold.
Allegedly, Joe Esposito said this in an interview recently.
Yeah.
That's 80% of 44 is.
Hey, if you price anything at the right price, it'll sell.
Yes, but also, I mean, it'd be interesting to see what they're pricing at, but like Delta, a long time ago, made it clear they were, just like everybody else, happy to stop giving away complimentary upgrades, right? They'd rather sell them.
But where are these planes flying, right? I think it's just Vegas and LA, right? Or is it just Vegas?
From where?
Atlanta. It's just they're Atlanta-based.
Yeah. If it's Atlanta-Vegas, then yeah, there's plenty of demand for premium, even if it's a, you know, not say $10 upgrade, but date myself there. But.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Because they're having some success with it, they are extending the operation of the 44-seat version, and it's only a schedule on Atlanta-Vegas from what I saw.
Yeah. Extending the operation is a relative term. They still got to get the approval and the whatever for the other seats. I believe that is still pending. Right? Yeah. The same thing about United, where Kirby did an interview, I think CNBC published it last week, of trying to figure out what they're going to do with their MAX 10s now that they ended up putting the 321s on transcons instead of the MAX 10s, right? Because at one point, the MAX 10 was flagged for transcon service. They were going to have flatbeds. It was the Ascent 80, or Adient Altitude was the seat. And Adient's changed names now and it's called something else and the seat, whatever. But apparently United bought all the seats pending Boeing, you know, assuming Boeing would actually deliver the planes, and they're sitting in a warehouse.
Well, I mean, look, extending the operation does mean they're not going to park the planes to take the engines off.
Fair. All sorts of options.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think United does then? Like, what do you think Kirby's going to do?
Make Boeing pay for the seats.
Yeah.
Make Boeing pay for them.
Going to fill a warehouse and Boeing will pay for it.
They might still go on the MAX 10s, right? It'll depend on what the demand. I mean, like it's very possible that the 321s do LA and San Francisco, and then they do like the old days, the other transcons with the MAX 10s.
They've got so many 321s coming that they've announced they're putting these seats on. And we talked about this a few times of if you just put 321s on the transcons to San Francisco and LA, there's not enough capacity. And there's not really slots to operate more at LA and San Francisco or Newark.
But have they said how many of the 321s are being configured in the Coastliner config?
I thought they did at one point and it was like 25. It was a lot. It's way more than is needed just for San Francisco and Newark, or excuse me, San Francisco and LA to JFK and Newark. And I'm giving credit where due that theoretically JFK is coming.
I mean, but so do they run those to Europe, the remainder of them, or do they keep spares? Like,
I mean, they don't run to Europe.
The PS fleet was what, 14 planes, 15 planes at its peak with six San Francisco and five LA flights, right? Okay. And so Newark is a lot more than six and five. Right, I think it's 12 and 14. And so, and add in JFK, I don't think 25 planes is going to be enough.
I mean, if you have 14 planes and are running 11 transcon round trips, and you can only run 11 transcon round trips with them, your fleet utilization is bad.
Sure. I think the challenge is when you're talking about JFK or Newark, you need extra padding because of the airspace.
Yep.
And that was the thing.
And San Francisco.
And that was the thing about PS. Fleet utilization wasn't great, but then they didn't have ripple effect.
Sure. An American learned when you ran a tag flight from JFK to Boston and back for utilization purposes, and people love getting the flatbed for an hour, that it screwed the return to LA and things got messy, right? Like, all those things are true. And yet I don't think they need 25 planes for the current transcon plans. And especially, even if they did that, it's still not like that would mean switching everything from wide bodies to these planes, and it's not enough seats.
Yep, I agree, it's not enough seats, but I think time will tell how the slot actually plays out.
Yeah,
with the 737 MAX 10s, do you think they send those to Europe if they put life flats on?
Don't give them ideas.
They've got the XLR for that. Why would you mix and match with the MAX 10?
I'm just thinking of like Chicago, Reykjavik.
What's the range of a MAX 10?
Less than the XLR.
But compared to the 8?
Oh, do you think they put it on like these weird routes that they do right now, like Santiago de Compostela, Spain?
Yeah, but I don't know if the 10 would have the legs. That's what I'm trying to understand.
Yeah.
I don't think it does. I'm trying to look it up now, but I'm pretty sure it doesn't.
So then why not use the Coastliners then, Seth? Like, why wouldn't you have the Coastliners?
Because you've got the XLRs and you've got a dedicated subfleet. It's a slightly different.
It's the same number of seats, isn't it?
Slightly different layout. I think it's 24 versus 20 up front.
Yes.
And premium economy is slightly different. It's close, but it's plus or minus 8 seats, I think. But they're similar, but different. And
I think
they may pull JetBlue and run some of them across the Atlantic when it makes sense to, because there's lower demand. But I think United is a slightly better setup in terms of planning for it than what JetBlue did with his Mint and trying to find places to put them.
I think we'll see MAX 10s proliferate into Hawaii and Central America.
Maybe that's what they do the Newark-Lima flight on.
No.
Oh, I don't think that has the range.
3,600 miles is the published range.
And it needs hot and high.
Yeah.
And the MAX 8 is 4,000. So you talk about putting it into Europe. I think that 400 miles makes a big difference.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the Delta and something you posted about, Seth, and there were some other posts on Blue Sky about their JV ruling. They won it.
Yeah, they won a lawsuit. This is the Aeromexico joint venture is ruled in their favor in the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, which is, I believe, an Atlanta-based court. So
amazing.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
Home field advantage.
Hometown airline wins one.
We'll donate to your re-election campaign. You give us something.
I mean, they're judges, so they're appointed, not elected, but sure.
Some judges are, depending on where you are.
Well, not the federal courts, which is what this is. 3,600 miles from Newark could hit northern South America, for what it's worth. But I just don't think there's... Lima would be very much at the edge.
Yeah, Lima's too
far. It's right at the edge. Literally. This is an interesting one. This was... The DOT was trying to unwind the Delta joint venture with... It's not joint venture, joint cooperation agreement with Aeromexico, and cited essentially that the operations at Mexico City airport and forcing all the cargo carriers out of there was a violation of the bilateral open skies agreement. And therefore, Mexico was no longer compliant with open skies. And so the joint venture had to die because the joint venture requires open skies to be properly implemented. Delta and Aeromexico appealed it. They filed a lawsuit. They won. They cited Haneda as a prime example of a closed airport, despite an open skies agreement and having certain restrictions. That proved compelling. There was also an argument made that the DOT should consider the entire national, nation to nation market, not just one single airport. Because they did that for the initial analysis, but not the renewal. The DOT's counterpoint there was, we didn't reconsider the entire markets nation to nation because we found the one part where there was a problem, because we've been watching this for 7 years and we know what the issue is. That did not impress the judges. I also would point out that the carve out for Haneda was agreed to by U.S. delegation when they were negotiating the contract, and a carve out for MEX was not. But what do I know?
I would also argue, there's no JV at Haneda.
There's two.
In Japan, I'm saying there's no Delta equivalent.
They're saying the ANA United or the JAL American deals are the same as
in violation, because
they're saying it's comparable to Delta and Aeromexico because access to the one airport sucks, but the rest of the nation is open skies, so we should just ignore. If you're going to allow those two, you have to allow ours also.
Except that they got preferential treatment at Haneda. So, I mean, this could have gone badly for them. They could have turned around and said, all right, well, then you don't get preferential treatment at Haneda anymore. Get out.
Yeah.
But I think I was reading that they are going to appeal it. The government's going to appeal it.
Are they?
But yeah, they said they're going to appeal it. But the question that I pose now, given our current administration, could they just cancel the open skies agreement?
With Mexico?
Yeah.
Yeah. Unilaterally say, never mind, we're cutting it off?
Yeah.
I mean, could they? Yes. That would be very bad at so many levels. I'd like to believe they know better than to do that.
That would kill American tourism into Mexico, essentially, right?
Yeah.
Probably here.
Which is all of it. I mean, not all of it, but all of it.
Oh, I mean, 99% of it.
It's a massive portion of high-value tourism. There's plenty of people crossing the road border, too, but a lot of that is workers. Yeah, it would be absurd and terrible, but yes, Foz, you're right. They could.
I mean, that's one way of giving Delta the finger.
Yeah.
I don't know. Oh. Vietnam. Let's talk about them. Vietnam Airlines at Munich. Kind of a crazy scenario. I think, Foz, we were coming back from Colombo when this happened, but they had a 787 overrun the runway, take off, have a tail strike, then return, and upon landing, shredded its gear, doing damage to the lower fuselage. It could have been very bad. You see the video of it, and it's kind of crazy by how much they overran.
It's wild. I mean, some of the pictures I saw, it looks like one of the brakes was not letting go or was intermittent.
Was like clamped?
Yeah, I think it was the left brake. There's skid marks down the runway that are intermittent.
Do you think it was braking while it was taking off?
Yes.
Huh.
And apparently, I didn't realize this, the 787 does not have hydraulic brakes. It has electric brakes.
Oh, interesting. Very interesting. I mean, they look like I don't know why they didn't slam on the brakes sooner. Maybe they did. I don't know. But they definitely were committed to taking off. Yeah, I thought maybe the plane was misconfigured or they put the wrong weights in or something. V1.
I think part of what I was reading was one of the brakes was engaging from what it looks like. It was intermittent. So when you think about that, right, you're doing your takeoff roll, you're struggling to gain speed, then suddenly it lets go and you're gaining speed.
And you're like, oh, everything's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. And then it reengages and then you're like, well, F. Now what?
Yep. I think the German authorities are investigating now. You have any updates, Seth?
No, I haven't seen any updates on it. It was pretty crazy, though. Good times.
Terrifying. And then lastly, Riyadh Air is adding Bangkok.
Yep, it's their next destination. You know, they've got a bunch of planes all of a sudden, so they got to start flying them.
That's a hell of a route.
Well, there's a lot of Thai labor that's coming into that part of the world.
Yeah.
True.
Right, we talked about this a little bit with Fly Dubai last, or a couple weeks ago, flying out of the other Bangkok airport with Emirates. So, yeah, no, not surprising. There's both for leisure travel, and I would imagine there's a certain volume of leisure travel of outbound from the kingdom to Bangkok, to Thailand.
Have they said they want to fly to the U.S.?
Oh, yeah.
When's that going to happen?
Soon? I don't know. Probably soon. They're building it. I would imagine probably next summer season. It'll happen. Okay. I don't think it's going to happen this fall.
Okay. And they're also partnering with ANA.
Yeah, they've got a something-ish coming up to allow connectivity across markets. It looks like Interline and Codeshare, and some discussion of loyalty reciprocity, which is interesting because ANA, Star Alliance, and Riyadh is certainly leaning towards SkyTeam. I don't think, are they actually a member, or are they just leaning that way?
I think they're leaning that way.
Yeah. So
we're going to say Fuzz.
I was just going to say they're leaning that way. I don't believe they're a part of SkyTeam yet.
Yeah. So obviously, I mean, to our point about Delta not having partners in Tokyo or in Japan, makes some sense. You know, you need something separately, but it's an MOU. There's obviously work to be done to get there, but I don't know.
I mean, I wonder if that relationship's going to get very far for Delta, given this ridiculously light loads on Atlanta or Yacht.
Has that flight started operating yet?
No, but like they're selling it for 15,000 miles each way.
I mean, also, especially right now, tickets into the Middle East are of questionable
sanity.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Well, you guys got anything else? Because we're going to talk about some things in the bonus topics. Do you have anything else in the main show you want to talk about?
Not for me.
I'm good.
All right. So we're going to talk about American Airlines and their new IFE. We're going to talk about some February 2027 craziness. We're going to talk about AI, unfortunately. We're going to talk about...
That's going to be a good one. That's actually going to be some fun.
We're going to talk about Emirates, hinting at another route from South America to Europe. And then Google and Spirit and the data that lies between them, as well as Chicago Gates. We're going to talk about that. So stick around if you're a Patreon supporter. If not, thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.
See you later.